So I can imagine that growing up in Estonia, where the Soviet Union had an immense hold and influence for a long time, must have been a pretty impactful and tumultuous experience. It's certainly one that many people and children in the US, including myself, have never experienced. I think for many immigrants, the US is not only a place for opportunity, but it also sort of exists as this exotic escape in a way. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what immigrating was like for you and the influence it has had on your work as a photographer.
I guess I will in some way not correct you, but I guess tell you my version of growing up during Soviet Union and my childhood. It was not tumultuous at all,
Oh,
and it
really?
was not difficult at all. I guess I was 7 or 8 when Soviet Union fell in 1991, and I was just about to start first grade. And the only memory I have of anything remotely, sort of giving me some kind of impression of regime or political oppression was seeing tanks coming into the city I was living in because we were on the verge of going to war. And basically it got resolved diplomatically and the tanks left at some point. But I remember the city being barricaded, and I remember my parents telling me that they weren't sure if I was even gonna go to first grade because there might be war happening. So that was my first realization that this was something bad, or this was, a strange place to be living. Because up until then, I would wear like Lenin pins, and I would want to be like the communist pioneer. And I was like, Lenin loves kids, and I was kind of went with the Soviet propaganda just because it was around. But I had a very happy and innocent and kind of carefree childhood. And I think when you're a kid, you don't really realize what's going on if you're kind of in your own fantasy. But growing older, hearing stories from my parents and being raised by a grandmother whose family was taken to Gulag in Siberian like work camps, and they were taken there merely because their family was educators, they were teachers, and so intellect and educators were very sort of threatening to Soviet Union. So a lot of people in the 1940s were actually taken to Siberia. So hearing those stories afterwards definitely left an imprint and affected me and made me think about the country where I'm from very differently, and made me start to really see what was going on behind the Iron Curtain, because I think I definitely went with the propaganda as a kid. And I came to United States way after we gained independence. So I also saw this time when Estonia and a lot of previous Soviet countries became kind of the Wild Wild West, and the rise of capitalism. A lot of people got really rich, and a lot of people got really poor very quickly. And people were just kind of like going wild and crazy. Nobody paid taxes. It was just like kind of a strange, bizarre time, because it was almost like Estonia was trying to figure out how to be independent and how to become its own country. And so yeah, my parents divorced at that time because I think they realized, it was just like so much freedom. It was almost like too much
Too much
freedom.
freedom,
Yeah. And the people just kind of went overboard. And once things kind of settled down, America was always something that we never even dreamt of that. I remember that when it was during Soviet Union, my mom and my grandma would be talking about, like, you know, where would they like to travel to? And my mom was always dreaming of going to Finland. And Finland is only like 2 hours away, but we couldn't go there during Soviet Union.
Yeah, I understand.
And my grandma was like, I'm dreaming of going to America one day. And we were all like, America, you're crazy. Like, you don't even like, you don't even think it exists on a map because it's far away. But I came here when I was 17, actually, to US.
Mm-hmm.
Because my mom went through some kind of like a personal crisis.
Yeah.
And she was like signed up for a dating website.
Oh, wow.
And she basically found a boyfriend in Illinois, in McHenry County.
Wow.
And in Cary, Illinois.
Yeah.
And so she came to Illinois. She thought she was going to Chicago. So she was telling us all she's going to Chicago.
Oh, okay.
But it was, different reality. And then after she actually moved back to Estonia after this year of being here. And then I came here when I was 17. I came here illegally, kind of on a tourist visa, and I overstayed my tourist visa. And so,
Yeah, that's great though that you had that opportunity and you took it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure it was a little bit strange at first, but like I can't even imagine doing that at 17.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems way beyond what I could possibly handle. But
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it was kind of like I had won this photography competition and they gave me a trip for to St. Petersburg when I was 17. And then I was like, how about I change it to a ticket to Chicago? How about I like get a, you know, plane ticket? And at that time I was kind of like, you know, screw everything. I want to leave this place. I want to go. I wanted to study art and I couldn't study that in Estonia. And so I wanted to take that. I just really wanted to leave. And I think a lot of people at that time in Estonia were like,
they wanted to get out of there.
Get out of there. Even though we were independent, but I think knowing that you could leave and you could travel was just something our parents couldn't do. So it was almost like us fulfilling their dreams. So
I understand.
Yeah.
Did your grandmother, was she supportive in that too?
She actually, that was probably one of the reasons I left, because she had passed, and you know, her being such a big mother figure for me,
mm-hmm.
I think it was really just was a hard time, and I think I just needed like a fresh start.
You needed a new start.
And then Illinois it was. And so I mean it was like landing on the moon, because I grew up in a medieval city.
Mm-hmm.
From 11th century.
Wow.
With like cobblestones and, you know, like Harry Potter sets, you know. And then I come to in the middle of the cornfields with subdivisions.
Yeah.
And IHOP. And you know, it was just like, what?
Like you don't see that when where no, it was, you're from.
Yeah, for sure.
Around the street.
Oh, no, for sure.
I guess I want to get into talking a little bit about your work. So after I acquainted myself a little bit more with your photographs, I saw this kind of wonderful sense of vulnerability and sort of uncomfortability in your photos. I'm especially curious about your series And the Fruit and the way you're utilizing the camera and your stance as a photographer to really connect with people who don't quite fit in and sort of live in their own created worlds. I see some parallels between what you're doing in this series with what Diane Arbus and Nan Golden were interested in. You know, as two really groundbreaking female photographers, Arbus, who documented marginalized people in the late 50s and 60s, and Golden, who established herself through her photographs of New York subculture in the late 70s and 80s, they both really developed strong relationships with their subjects and certainly expanded the scope of photography's focus. Can you speak about your influences with this work in particular and how you were able to develop a relationship with the individuals portrayed to showcase who they are and the world they live in every day?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad you picked up on Arbus and Nan Golden's work, because those two photographers definitely have been a huge influence on my work. And and role models on so many levels. Just their like the rawness of the work. I think it's something I've really admired. But Anderfruit really happened actually by sort of an accident. Like many of my projects happen that way. It's I never really think them through in the beginning. I always sort of like, I'm kind of like, you know, a dog who just trusts the nose, you know, and then wherever the nose takes me to the next sort of treat or pebble, that's where I go. Yeah. And then somehow I'm like, oh, it feels like I've been kind of following this track or this trail of thought. And then a project happens. And I think End of Fruit happened the same way. It actually began with making a nude of a guy named Timmy in Kentucky. And it was in 2010, I think, where I had kind of, I was really gung-ho about going to Kentucky, going to the South, driving there, doing this like romantic road trip photo thing, like sleeping in my car, like, you know, swimming in lakes. And because, you know, road trip photography has been like a well-trotted area for, you know, male photographers like Evans and Frank and Winogrand. And so I really wanted to do something like that on my own. And so I wanted to go to Kentucky to photograph parades and 4th of July parades, especially because it was that time. And, you know, I did it. I went there and I photographed people watching fireworks in at Walmart parking lots. And, you know, it was like a weird phenomenon for me. Like, I was like, why would you watch money getting blown up in the air in a parking lot?
Exactly.
You know? But during that time, one of the parades, this guy, Timmy, comes up to me and is sort of like hitting on me. And he had an interesting face. And I'm so attracted to how things look. And that's how my pictures really happen. It's just like being attracted to the surfaces at first. And so I was like, asked him if I could take a portrait of him. He said yes. And then he was like, you know, I have a really large penis. Like, if you want to take a nude of me, actually he said nudie, if you want to take a nudie of me, go right ahead. And I'm like, okay, like, just so you know, I am at school right now and I'm on this photo trip, but I'll go back to school. And I might show this picture in a critique and I might put it on my website. And, you know, are you okay with that? And he's like, yes, please do. I want to be a porn star.
Wow.
And I want everybody to see my, you know, man pride. And so I took some photos of him and it was so scary and I was so nervous for being like getting, you know, killed basically. And but when I came back, and I saw the film and I saw that picture of him standing by the river, you know, with his pants being pulled down and him having like a half erection, I was like, this is what making work should be like. You should be nervous and you should be a little bit scared and you should feel kind of apprehensive and you should feel like you're doing something kind of wrong and this is, you're pushing something. And this is what, that's the state what I want to be in when I make my work. I don't want to be comfortable. I don't want to know what the hell I'm doing. I want to feel like I'm trying something kind of new and scary and weird. And something that's a little bit, you know, not so polite or not so comfortable for anybody. And so I was like, you know, I had made this series about women in the suburbs in Illinois. I did a whole series of portraits of women. And I was like, how about I do portraits of men and nudes? And then it kind of evolved from that to like couples. And then I started being interested in like, how do I sort of start fabricating some kind of an intimacy between me and my subject, even though we have no relations, but how do I almost make these portraits of them like a lover would, but in this kind of very messed up way,
yeah,
an awkward way. And so I you know, I wanted to, you know, I wanted to feel like I had something at stake, and I was kind of being in an uncomfortable position, because mm-hmm. often I felt like my subjects were more exploiting me and taking advantage of me, because right. it was almost like they were satisfying their kind of an exhibitionist side of themselves. So yeah. I started to, you know, I was interested in people who really wanted to show themselves and wanted to be in front of the camera. So it wasn't necessarily about me convincing somebody to be photographed, but me almost going out there and being like, well, show yourself. I am interested in you. I think you're worth looking at. And it wasn't about trying to show, you know, who they are or their freak side or anything like that. But yeah. but just like letting people be theatrical and act out in some way. And I wanted the camera to give us license to do that, to play and to experiment. Yeah. And so that work was really great to make, but it did leave me in a very exhausted state at the end, because yeah. I felt that I was being in some way used more, or like, you know, even though I was in control, I just felt very exhausted afterwards. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a lot of like, you know, a lot of naked people are exhausting to work with, you know, but no, I kind of, it's in some ways, I do want to return to that. And I think I will.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that you're talking about that feeling of you being exploited. Cause I was wondering if, like, I know with Diane Arbus, she was often questioned, like, you're like kind of exploiting these people. And I was wondering if any of these people felt like they were being exploited in any way.
I think so. I think there's always a moment in the photo shoot where somebody, like one person will start to feel, what the hell am I doing here? Like, mm-hmm. what am I doing? Like, what is this? You know, I have a job. I have kids. Like, what am I doing with this stranger? And I kind of like those moments when they happen, when you do, you know, you have already, like, the subject as, or the person that I'm photographing has kind of is taking a risk with me, is doing something out of the ordinary, out of their routine. And then they realize, like, oh, I wanted this fantasy, but it's turning out to be, like, more kind of, you know, screwed up than I thought. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of exciting. I think it's exciting when we both realize that our kind of needs are not getting fulfilled. Like, I feel it's always this awkward dance, like the mm-hmm. subject is not getting what they wanted, their fantasy is actually not coming to mm-hmm. reality, mm-hmm. and I'm also struggling. And so, and I think it's an interesting place where you know, we kind of both realize we are out of tune in some way, you know, there is a disharmony. And Arbus is somebody that you just look at the work and you can't not to like love those people or be interested or be intrigued. Like mm-hmm. she just like shoves it in your face in yeah. so many ways. So yeah. And I think her boldness or her kind of drive is something that has inspired me for sure.
Yeah. I'm just curious, like, would you say that you kind of came to terms with what you kind of wanted to be as like a photographer, or like pushing you to maybe step outside of your comfort zone and think about, you know, what type of direction you wanted to go in, even for like future products after that one, specifically and the fruit?
Yeah. I think because and the fruit ended up being also quite just formally have kind of a formula, or mm-hmm. like it was always the subject in the center of the frame. Like maybe they were in some kind of a movement or doing mm-hmm. something, but I felt very limited as a photographer. Okay. I felt like I wanted to make landscapes. I wanted to photograph inanimate objects. I mm-hmm. wanted to, you know, I just wanted to try to be more flexible as a photographer. And mm-hmm. I think that's why, you know, how ESC really happened was also just like wanting to do something totally different than what I have done. Like, I tried black and white. I tried photographing still lives. You know, I just, I had made the work of the women in a suburb, Subtopia, and I had made And the Fruit, and they were both very heavy, you know, portraiture projects. So I think the work up here now is something that I just needed to cast a wider net in some way and just show that I'm a more sort of a flexible artist and photographer.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I would say that you've definitely made an incredible impact in kind of elevating documentary journalistic photography as kind of a fine art form. And, you know, well, I think people may not necessarily think of your subjects as being particularly dramatic. The way in which you compose each image and utilize mechanical effects such as flash really creates this sense of kind of the hyper-real and surreal qualities that exist in reality, whether we realize them or not. From the pieces in this exhibition, ESE, I think one of the images that I keep coming back to is the Russian boxer. Immediately when I saw this image, I thought of the painter Norman Rockwell and his magazine covers. I think just the way in which the Russian boxer is posed with his boxing gloves held out in front of his chest, you know, that shock and sweat that's just displayed on his face, also with the vibrant red of his jersey, and then the really, I think, dark kind of paneled background really reminded me of Rockwell's compositions. I think it feels almost painterly in a way. And there's also this all-American folksy quality to your image. And I'm intrigued by your how you're able to really enhance the color and drama through kind of the mechanical effects that you use. So I was hoping you could discuss this a bit more and some of the other dualities that a lot of these pieces in ESE develop.
Okay. I think the color and the harsh light is something that's definitely drives from, I think, some kind of childhood memories, for sure. I know it sounds so, such a corny thing to say, but the palette, my color palette is very kind of Eastern European, I think. And oftentimes when I photograph in US, people say like, oh, these pictures, the aesthetic or the way pictures, my palette and the saturation or the flash, they look, it's, there's something kind of almost Slavic about it. And it's weird to say this because Estonia is not a Slavic country. Estonia is like a more Northern European, more Scandinavian country. So it's strange to kind of see that in my work, because usually, like, you know, Northern European photographs are more sort of, you know, desaturated or monotone, or they have a, like, a different palette. And I think my palette is almost more like Russian or something. You know, I don't know if it's a politically correct thing to say, but I always, you know, find that maybe I have some like Slavic sides or something in me, because things are quite aggressive and loud and vibrant. And, you know, the boxer too, I think, I just had to kind of come to terms that the way I photograph people is a lot harsher than the way I photograph landscape, and the people I photograph in a much more judgmental and aggressive way. And that's why the flash, and that's why, like, the saturated colors and kind of like an unforgiving way of describing them. And I mean, the boxer was an interesting picture that happened just by just going back to the same boxing club in Tallinn in Estonia, where, you know, it was one of the first images in this project. And at that time, I was not working on a project again. I just was visiting. I was back home after, you know, a divorce, and I was just feeling super depressed. And I was like, just, I needed like a place to go and a purpose in a way, where to go take pictures. Because, you know, when you go out with your camera, you're like, where the hell do I go? You know, where do I go make my work? It's like, which, do I go left? Do I go right? You know, it's like, it's that basic. And the boxing club was almost like a place that I continuously kept walking to and going back to like a few times a week. Because I just walked in there and I met the person who runs it, and we kind of made a trade that I was like, I'll take pictures for your website, and if I can come here and make my work. And a lot of pictures also happened on my walks to the boxing club. So in some ways, the boxing club was like, it was almost like the 4th of July parades. Yeah, you know, like I needed a reason to get out there.
Point.
Exactly. I needed some reason. So it's like, even if you give yourself like a fake reason to go out somewhere, just do it, because hopefully you'll end up doing something completely different than you first thought of. And so I took a lot of pictures in the boxing club, but then this one was one of the first ones, and he was so great because his face just looks so wild and crazy. He looks kind of like one of these like Dostoevskian figures who just like axe murdered somebody, or you know, he has this kind of a crazy look.
Yeah, I love that.
And so and I wanted, you know, I always want my work to kind of, I use the word subtle sometimes, and when I describe my work, it's like, well, it's a subtle way of saying something. I'm like, it's not subtle. It's really like, it's really kind of loud and
maybe it's aggressive. Loud, but
yeah.
I think it's simple in the way it's like display that it's just like, it's there.
Right.
So you don't have to, I mean, you can get that from those images and from, I think, those people.
Yeah.
Like you said.
Yeah, like the moments are subtle, but maybe the way it's photographed is kind of...
Yeah. I mean, I can see, because definitely in a few, like, because you have, you've used flash in quite a few of your photographs. And I think, you know, when you think of flash, you think of it being very aggressive in its nature. And I think it can tend to come off that way. But, you know, the way I think you utilize it, it really balances, I think, your subject matter and then just the overall quality of the image itself, too.
Yeah, because flash is so artificial. You right away know it's a photograph when you're looking at it. Then it makes you think of commercial or advertisement or something. And so, yeah, I do. And it, you know, it adds this kind of theatricality to the pictures, which I kind of like. Yeah, I think it's, I like this, the way you mentioned that it's like the moments or the, what's happening is, can be very kind of quiet and subtle, but then it's the way it's photographed, it's very like, you know, loud, a punch in the face in a way.
I think one of the images that really intrigued me when I saw it, just because it took me to a whole new place, was, that tree, the large tree piece with that just vibrant green tree, and then the night sky, just that, I mean, it's almost this intensely vibrant blue that I'm so not used to seeing. And when I saw that image, I was just like, this can't be a real tree, can it? And I'm just like, it just made me think about, I think, my own surroundings in a different way. What is it like for you when you're in those moments, and you know, even in those moments where you set up the flash, what kind of feelings kind of come over you as a photographer?
Well, the tree photo, I also happened out of like feeling totally scared and terrified, which I think is great, because I do like this bewitched sensations that could have, you know, it's like the tree is like, looks like it's something magical and witchy is happening. And the tree I took in Louisiana, and it was in a bayou, and it was nighttime, and there was it was like, there was really nothing around, it was just like kind of a swampy area, and there was like a big party on the background, because it was a tiny little sort of a village by a bayou, and I set up my tripod, and I felt very like, I think I remember feeling like, I think a crocodile or alligator is gonna like come. Is it alligator? Like, which ones are they? Like, I always forget.
I think it might be crocodiles. Crocodile. Maybe? I'm not sure.
Something is gonna like come out and bite. You know, it just felt very like
eerie.
Eerie, and there was so many noises and mosquitoes, and then the exposure had to be really long in order to capture this tree. Yeah. And I think I was on this trip, and the only reason I happened to be photographing there was because I had been driving around and I stopped at this bar on the side of the road, and the bartender was like, oh, if you want to photograph like really cool, weird area, like go down this road, like this many miles. And then, you know, you will see like trees and moss and just like a bizarre landscape. And so, you know, I often kind of, I like to meet local people wherever I go.
Yeah.
And by where that tree was, fishermen had taken me out on a boat, and they were like, you have to come back here when we have alligator fight, like when young men are wrestling alligators here. And wow. So it's, even though, you know, some pictures, if they're like landscapes or still lives, there, a lot of times I get to that place because the people that I meet or the strangers on the road. And so it's, I sort of like that the tree looks so dark, but also so romantic and kind of surreal. And the colors, you know, I don't do saturating, any kind of saturation. I actually often have to desaturate colors.
Oh, wow.
So it's not something I try to not make it look so artificial or fake or anything.
It's not something that you manipulate in any way.
No, not really. I mean, and with the long, you know, exposures, you, that reciprocity failure, right, will also kind of screw up your colors. And so, I kind of let it go wild. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think in some of the other, I mean, throughout ESC, I think two of the elements that I'm particularly interested in are the play of voyeurism and kind of focus on capturing the aftermath of what has happened. There's a sense of endurance and fortitude that comes from your images, especially as they relate to, I think, the individuals you're portraying and the landscapes that reflect, these events, some events of hardship. I'm stunned by some of the beauty that you bring out aesthetically, which I kind of see as this nod to the good and or a nod to the good that can come out of harsh experience. I'm also intrigued by kind of your meditation on seeing and experiencing how one sees through like the lens of a camera. What emphasis do you really place on these ideas, and how will you continue to use them in the future?
So I'm trying to it's a really good question. I'm just trying to wait. But the first part was about
play of voyeurism.
Play of voyeurism. I've always been, even growing up, was just like, I loved meeting strangers, and I was curious. Like, I would always hop on a random bus and just take it to the last stop. And I just, this idea of being on some kind of a journey or a trip has, I think, been always part of me. I was always very curious. I wasn't like afraid to go out of my house.
Yeah.
I would just leave early morning and then come back late. You know, I would come back at night, like just being a kid roaming around. And I think, it's something in my work as well. I do think that I'm trying to, I do have this, you know, kind of like one story I always think that I'm telling with my work, whether it's with Subtopia or ESC, and the fruit. And, you know, it's so much of it is, I think, how so much other work too is about, you know, this human condition, and it's like my place in the world and where I've come from. And you know, my family has been through a lot of traumas, and I don't want to talk about it in this very like literal way, like in this one-to-one way. And it's just my way of synthesizing it in some way.
Yeah.
And then I also find it really interesting when we're not just talking about our past pains or sufferings or trauma, but how we can connect to other people who've also been through hard times. And it is so much about perseverance and kind of overcoming that. Mm-hmm. And I think voyeurism is something that, I like when a photograph feels like there's a secret. There's a secret you should kind of crack.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be so cryptic that you really have to have studied all the art theories and read all the books or something,
exactly.
But it's like that there is a little bit of like a code to be cracked, a secret. There's, mm-hmm. It's a mystery, and I think it should mm-hmm. be. And I think maybe the way when some pictures feel like voyeuristic is that's the idea that I want to convey, that mm-hmm. there is a secret. But yeah, I think when I'm looking through the lens, I think the last sort of part, the second part was what it feels like when I look through the lens. I don't know if you know this. Do you know this photographer, Alessandra Sanguinetti? She made this really beautiful work about these two girls growing up in a village in Argentina, I believe so.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard her lecture one time, and she said that, when she looks through the camera, she takes pictures because she keeps telling herself, like, I don't understand what I'm looking at. And so, like, I don't understand this, so click. I don't understand this, another click. So it's almost like you are figuring things out as you look at them. I think mm-hmm. the moment when I go into a situation and I know exactly what I'm looking at and what's in front of me, it's not interesting. It's not challenging me in any way. So I think I always make work from a place of not understanding and wanting to know more and wanting my work to teach me something.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it answered your question. It's like I'm being sort of super vague. But yeah, I think it's also a way for me to, it's interesting you use the word meditate because I'm like very into meditation.
Okay.
And I very much believe in the powers of that. And I think taking pictures too and taking photographs out in the world for me feels in some way like a meditation. It feels like I am being present. I am aware what's around me. I am sort of awake,
Yeah.
It's and I think you can do the same thing in a studio setting as well. But being out in the real world and photographing and not trying to be this traditional documentary photographer, but paying attention to things that are actually in front of you and kind of questioning your own preconceived ideas about the things in front of you, to me is very healthy. I feel like I have to look at this thing and I have to deal with it. And what's my opinion about it? How is my opinion changing about it?
Mm-hmm.
I think the camera is really, for me, it's really great at that. It's great for me to just be alive, be awake in some way, be alert, just know like the immediate world around me.
Yeah. That's wonderful. That's great.
Yeah.
I often think about that a lot when I'm just going about my everyday. There's, I think, so many people that can connect to that,
mm-hmm.
Especially with, I think, how fast-paced the world is now,
mm-hmm.
That just those present moments really are important, and they have a lot of vibrations in them for themselves.
Yeah. And it's so interesting when you photograph people that, people love to be paid attention to.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best gift you can give to another person is time. I think time is like
mm-hmm.
something that is so valuable. And I always feel like my subjects, even if they don't always feel super comfortable, they want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want somebody to pay attention to them and love them in some way, you know, in some perverse way, like the camera does love them. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that's great. Oh, great. Yeah. Thank you for your time.
Yes, thank you.